cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined, as always, by my good buddy John Mariano. How are you doing tonight, John?
I was going to go cruise around and try to pick up chicks, but I decided I'm 46 and probably should stay home and podcast with my buddy.
Were you a big cruiser when you were a kid? I know when I was a kid, I think I talked about this on the last show, we would drive down to Plentywood, Montana, in kind of our muscle cars. Our big Dodges and stuff like that, and we would cruise the strip and try and pick up chicks. It was a good time.
Yeah, we had a turnpike, and we would drive across maybe two or three towns worth of the turnpike. Like that strip had a lot of fast food places, and it was, you kind of did it between two diners, and then there was a Burger King parking lot on one end. And there was a gas station on the other end, not the only gas station, but it was kind of like, you want to kind of go beyond that because it was more of a high crime area beyond that. So you stuck to the safer areas. And there were a bunch of us that I usually sat in the back of my buddy's 87 Monte Carlo, and our other buddy, Matt, ran shotgun, and Bob drove. And we would just ride up and down the street, which sounds really boring, but we didn't have iPads or anything back then.
That's what we did for fun, kids, way back in the day. You would think talking about cruising, we're going to be talking about American Graffiti tonight, but we're not. We're going a different route. If American Graffiti were evil, we're kind of going down that road. And we're talking about a favorite author of both John and myself, Stephen King, and his classic 1983 novel that was turned into a classic 1983 John Carpenter film, Christine. I just watched this last weekend with my child. Surprised at how little gore and horror was actually in it, but we still had a good time watching it. John, do you remember way back in the 1980s watching John Carpenter's Christine?
I do. I had just moved out to Long Island. My family had, and we had a tenant who was about 3 years older than me. And my brother and I were upstairs hanging out with him. And he's like, "Oh man, Christine's on." I'm like, "What's Christine?" He's like, "Oh, you got to check this out. This car is just evil." And we watched it, and it was so badass. It was kind of like it, you know, at the time we were big fans of Knight Rider and things like that. And it was like, as if Kit was just an asshole. and it didn't talk, but it kind of did in ways.
It did, yeah.
It spoke with its attitude and its murderous rampage. And God bless this car.
It's wonderful. Tell you a little bit about the plot of Christine, because it's a little different than the book. Christine is basically a haunted car, and she was haunted right on the assembly room floor. And you have this great opening scene, which is where we're pulling tonight's song from. And a guy was kind of, you know, doing a once over, looking over this beautiful cherry red 58 Plymouth Fury. And the hood was up, and he put his hand just kind of inside, looking for something. And the hood comes slamming down and catches his hand. After he gets taken away to the hospital, another guy gets in the car, and he's got a cigar, and he flicks the ash onto Christine's seat, and she didn't like that. And she actually kills him through carbon monoxide poisoning. She was bad to the bone from day one, John. And that's the song we're doing here tonight. George Thorogood and the Destroyers, Bad to the Bone, which has been maybe in more movies than any other song in history, but definitely a classic from Christine. Now, in the Christine, the book, I better get this right for our friend Christy McGee. The car wasn't so much possessed, but the owner died. He was really obsessed with the car, and you know, he killed his family in the car, and he's kind of the ghostly figure that's talking to this young boy who sees Christine kind of, you know, rusted and dilapidated in a yard with a for sale sign in her. So he goes and buys her, and he kind of influences this kid, Artie. But in the movie, it's the car itself kind of speaking to Artie, and he works really hard to fix her up, and things kind of go from there. I don't want to get too much into spoilers, but if you're a fan of Stephen King and you're a fan of John Carpenter, holy cow, you better have seen John Carpenter's Christine. Now, John Carpenter coming off The Thing, which didn't do very well, even though it's one of the best horror movies of all time, said he took this more kind of as a job than he did as a passion project. But I thought he did an amazing job with it.
Oh, it's a phenomenal job. And Carpenter is one of my favorite directors. I think we're going to need to start covering more Carpenter movies. We just got to see what songs fall in them. But especially his Kurt Russell movies are just some of the best. And Carpenter did Starman, didn't he?
He did, yep.
So, I mean, Carpenter's got a few good ones in his wheelhouse that we're going to need to cover at some point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to think, is there a song in They Live? Because I'll talk about They Live till the cows come home.
Yeah, you got They Live, you got The Thing, you got Big Trouble in Little China. There's definitely some music in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yep.
So yeah, we're gonna have to get into it at some point.
Oh, but
you
can't
picked
wait.
A good one to start. Like, Christine's a great entry into Carpenter.
Yeah, it really is. And I was just reading a little bit about the conception, because the novel and the movie came out the same year. Like, Stephen King was pretty red hot in the 80s. And producer Richard Kobritz, who had done Salem's Lot, which is the TV miniseries that was based on a Stephen King novel, got friendly with Stephen King, and Stephen sent him two manuscripts and said, here, you can take any one of these if you want to make a movie. One was Christine and the other was Cujo. And he thought, well, the Cujo thing seems kind of dumb. It's a dog. But this car thing might be good, because America's obsessed with cars and all that. So John Carpenter, who was actually developing an adaptation of Firestarter, another Stephen King property at the time, he was kind of, I'm not really interested, until Firestarter fell through. And then he's like, well, you know, here's an opportunity. Maybe The Thing didn't do well. I'm just kind of looking for a job. Stephen King's kind of cool, and he likes cars. And so he knocked out what I think is really kind of an underrated classic of early's 1980 horror. Like I said, not overly gross, not overly scary, but, you know, really kind of creepy in a good way. And that's largely due to the cast. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started, John. Talking about Keith Gordon, who played young Artie, the young nerdy kid who everybody picks on, who Christine kind of falls in love with. And there's kind of a transformation, not only with the car, but with him as well.
So pop quiz, Corey.
Okay.
This is our second Keith Gordon movie that we're covering. Do you recall the first one?
Man, we've done 40 shows. Not offhand. Can I have a hint? I phone a friend.
Pat Benatar.
Oh, is she in Billie Jean?
Yeah, he's in Billie Jean. He plays the love interest.
Oh.
He plays the love interest in Billie Jean, and he's also from Jaws 2.
Right.
And my personal favorite Keith Gordon performance in movie. Actually, no, this might be my favorite performance from Keith Gordon. My favorite Keith Gordon movie, his father in the movie goes back to school.
And if you haven't guessed the name of the film, it's Back to School. He's Rodney Dangerfield's kid.
He's Jason Mellon. He's Thornton Mellon's son.
So when we do Rodney Dangerfield sing and Twist and Shout, we'll have to put that on the list too. Because
we're going to need to talk about that movie, because we're going to need to talk about. We're probably going to need an entire episode to talk about Sam Kinison in that movie.
Oh, absolutely! Like that's going to be a three-parter, because you got Sam Kinison, you got the triple Lindy, and you got Rodney Dangerfield just being Rodney Dangerfield, which is glorious. But I digress.
But Keith Gordon's now a director, and you know, he doesn't have very many acting credits, but these four movies that we mentioned that he's in, even Jaws 2, not remembered as a great movie because it's next to Jaws. It's one of the better slasher movies, though, right? Like if you think about like the Jason movies and things like that, and you think the shark is like a stalker stalking the boats in that movie, right? Keith Gordon, his performance in that movie really helps hold the movie together. And what's funny is I'm bringing up slasher movies for a reason now, Corey, because this is what we call a segue. Originally cast as Arnie in this movie was an actor who was known for a slasher movie and had to turn it down because he got a legendary role in his career.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know who it is. I haven't looked at anything. Kevin Bacon.
How did you get that?
Because I watched the making of Christine on the Blu-ray right after we watched the movie, and they talked about Kevin Bacon. Oh yeah, but he got Footloose.
And that Footloose.
Yeah. I think he made the right call.
I mean, imagine that. Like, you're going to be in this John Carpenter movie, and how his career would have been different had he taken Christine over Footloose.
Yep.
I'm not bashing Christine at all, but Footloose, that soundtrack, that song was everywhere. And people, to this day, Star-Lord over in the Marvel Universe thinks it's the greatest movie of all time.
Well, he's like the greatest hero to the Guardians, Kevin Bacon. Yeah, he saved humanity with dancing. Absolutely. Whereas Christine, like you mentioned, budget at $10 million, made 21, made money. Well, it wasn't a huge hit or anything, but it's kind of seen now as kind of a cult classic. And speaking of classics, George Thorogood and the Destroyers, they're still out there. They're still performing. They're coming to Saskatchewan, actually, pretty quick. I'm kind of debating whether or not to get tickets so I could hear this song live, but we're ready to talk a little bad to the bone here tonight. What do you say, John? You ready to go?
Oh, let's rock and roll.
One of the best intro guitar riffs of all time?
Oh, one of the most recognizable, easily.
Mm-hmm. God, I just love that. That's why Bad to the Bone is used by like pitchers in baseball as walkout music, professional wrestlers, mixed martial arts fighters, like... Because once you hear that guitar, like, you know.
There was a point in my life, there was a point in my life where I would consider it very overplayed,
mm-hmm.
but not so much anymore, right? And it does hold up.
Born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad.
So it's a pretty great song, and of the time it was pretty badass. With you watching the movie recently, because I haven't seen the movie in about 20 years, how does the song hold up tonally against what's going on in the movie? Because it seems like it's a kind of uplifting song. Does just juxtaposition against this murderous car work well, or is it like a little corny?
No, it works perfect. Like I'm trying to remember exactly how it opens, but it's like a tracking shot in here that so you know something badass is going to happen. And they showed this like assembly line of Plymouth Furies. And I don't know if you've seen the Plymouth Fury, but just the way the grills aligned and the headlights and stuff, you know, it looks like it's alive. And there's a moment in the film actually where the hood's all jagged. It looks like teeth and it looks like a shark. But you see this red and white Plymouth Fury coming down, and just the way that John Carpenter staged it, absolutely no perfect. Like my daughter, who didn't really know anything about the movie going into it, was like, "Oh, Dad, there's something with that car," just based on the music and the way he framed everything, and coming into the opening of the film, it works just bloody perfect.
Now, and it's a beautiful car. Can we talk about the car for a minute?
Because it's amazing. Yeah,
it's a cherry red Plymouth Fury, right?
Yep, 58 Plymouth Fury.
Yeah, like my favorite car at the time, and you know, when you're like 9-10 years old or whatever, your favorite car is usually predicated on what your parents' favorite car is. Mm-hmm. And my mother loved the 57 Chevy, and I loved the 57 Chevy. But having seen Christine, there's something about the sleekness of the Plymouth Fury. It's a little bit lower. It's a little bit narrower. Right, it's a little, to me, it was just a little bit more badass, a little bit longer.
Still there?
Okay. Yeah, you.
No, sorry, I thought you froze. I thought there was more to that.
No, I just stopped. But we should keep the awkwardness in there, because sometimes that's a testament to our friendship that we can have these awkward silences.
Well, sometimes you freeze, and you were sitting very still. I'm like, John Zoom froze on him.
So I learned something. I learned something, Corey, and we're going to put this on the air.
Okay.
There's something about my connection to you in Canada, because I recently guested on an episode of the Haskin Cast with our buddy Scott Haskin, and he also uses the Zoom program to do the recordings. I thought it was Zoom that I was having issues with. Didn't freeze once.
So it's just you.
So I can tell you at work on my work computer, I don't freeze at all using my internet. So it's not my internet. And it's not my Zoom.
You're blaming Canada.
I'm blaming Canada.
Oh, you bucker. There's a song we got to do from a movie. Anyways, I was just going back to the 58th Fury. I think they like bought like 23 cars for the film, and they smashed them all up but two. One of them was actually just auctioned off not that long ago, and it was one that has all the windows blacked out because when Christine is on her murderous rampage, they blacked out all the windows so you can see the driver, because you weren't supposed to know if Artie was in the car or not. Is Christine just driving herself and mowing down these bullies? That was kind of the thing there. But Stephen King went with the 58 Plymouth Fury because, like the 57 Chevy, he had been in a ton of things. Cars at that time were pretty overexposed. He's like, nobody's ever put the 58 Fury in a film, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah, when we come back, we should probably talk about King a little bit, because he's the chef in this kitchen and cooks this up pretty awesomely.
Yes.
Bad to the bone. I broke 1,000 hearts before I met you. I'll break 1,000 more, baby, before I am through. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad to the bone.
One of the better songs with stuttering in it. Like, I always liked bad, as opposed to like BTO's You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, where it's just kind of unnecessary.
No, and the way he does the bad, which is very hard for me to replicate, mm-hmm. is very similar to how Chevy chases the na 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 from Caddyshack. Like, it just flows, and it's very hard that if you don't have that ability, I don't. It's a very hard stutter to replicate because it's to a beat.
Yeah, and done very well. But you want to talk about Stephen King? Let's talk about Stephen King. Oh man, one of my favorite authors of all time. I remember when Christine, when I got my beat up paperback copy back in the late 80s, falling in love with this book. 80s King is kind of hit and miss in a lot of ways, just because he had the big drug problem at the time. And some of the novels, like the Tommyknockers, he says he just hates how that thing turned out. But Christine was a real standout for me. Did you ever read the book?
Yeah, so one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about King is he's my most read author. I have down in my library downstairs maybe about 24 of his books, and I've read maybe 10 to 15 of them at least once, this being one of them. And he's such a good writer. He knows how to put you in a place and create an atmosphere. I used to love reading his books in a quiet house where, like, my mind could kind of build the scene, because he does that for you. And, you know, while this might not be my favorite King story, it's up there. It's up there. I just think he's one of the best writers. I went through a kick shortly after high school where it was King and Kuntz for me. Mm. I read a lot of both of them, and I think we should encourage people. I know this is a movies and music podcast, but I wouldn't be opposed to somebody picking some music up and reading a King book, because like The Shining, the book, is way different than the movie. That might be my favorite King book.
Yep.
And I love them both equally. I love the movie for what the movie does. I love the book for what the book does. And I love that they're unique and they're not the same, right? As much as it might have chapped his ass that they made changes, I love that they can each be standalone classics on their own.
Mm-hmm. In 9 years, Stephen King published his first book in 1974, the year I was born. Christine came out in 83. In 9 years, if you count Richard Bachman novels, which we showed, he wrote those.
Oh, yeah.
This was his 13th novel in 9 years. So I'm just going to run down the laundry list of what he wrote in that 9 year span. First was Carrie, yeah. Then Salem's Lot, then The Shining was his third one. Rage, a Richard Bachman book. The Stand, which is one of the biggest and best novels of his career. The Long Walk, The Dead Zone, Firestarter, Roadwork, Cujo, The Running Man, The Dark Tower, The Gunslinger, and then Christine in 83. He released two other books in 1983, Pet Cemetery and Cycle of the Werewolf. So very prolific writer early in his career.
Yeah, and think about all the classics you just listed in there, right? And sure, even some of the ones that people don't recognize, like things like The Gunslinger, right? Tie into the bigger story he was telling. And such a brilliant, brilliant man. Like, I would love to see the index cards in his home.
Oh, they'd be pretty legendary. Speaking of legendary, let's get back to George Thorogood.
You know, we give the guitar and the guitar riff so much credit for the song, but we don't give the sax enough love. Because the sax is doing all kinds of crazy good work in and around the guitar that really fills this song out.
Could not agree more. Let's shout out Hank Carter, who played saxophone on Bad to the Bone, doing a fantastic job. One thing I learned here, John, was that this song adapts the hook and the lyrics of a 1955 Muddy Waters song called Manish Boy. I'd never known that.
Oh, no, I had no idea.
You have to go back and listen to Manish Boy when we're done here now. I just knew of George Thorogood and the Destroyers and Bad to the Bone because, as I alluded to earlier, it's been in everything. Here's another laundry list for you. Here's just a sampling of some of the films Bad to the Bone was in. Christine, of course, The Color of Money. How about Lethal Weapon, Bull Durham, Talk Radio, Problem Child, Terminator 2, Problem Child 2, Major Pain, The Parent Trap, 3,000 Miles to Graceland, Joe Dirt, Beverly Hills Chihuahua. I know that's a favorite of yours. Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore, Megamind, The Muppets, Shaun the Sheep. And the last credit on here is a film called It's for Your Own Good, released in 2017.
I mean, that's pretty wild.
I make a rich woman beg, and I make a good woman steal. I make an old woman blush, and I make a young girl squeal. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone.
So sorry, I was working on a thought and it took me a little bit longer to get out than I wanted to. But you were making a point about how many movies this has been in. And do you consider this song overused because of that? Like, is it too much of a trope?
I could see why you'd go there. For me, no, just because I love the song. And it works so well in so many different situations. I go back to the bar scene in Terminator 2. What other song are you going to have in the jukebox? In Bad to the Bone, right? It's perfect.
Another Guns N' Roses song, because they already put one on that soundtrack.
Yeah. It's not like Thor Love and Thunder, where they used, 18 Guns N' Roses songs in that movie?
Yeah. No, but I would have done some deeper cuts off of Appetite, probably. That's just me.
Yeah.
But I really like this song. Some of those movies there, when this song shows up, I just kind of roll my eyes because I feel like the song's better than the movie it's in. And I'm looking at you, Problem Child, too. and I think movies like that, while they don't hurt the song, they add to that overplayed argument of like, if you have a crappy movie, you should probably pick a different song.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the movie, because we kind of alluded to Haunted Car. Mowing down people. So what happens was Artie is a loser. gets picked on along. He has a best friend, Dennis, who's quite popular. And you don't really get why Dennis and Artie are friends, but you're kind of glad they are, because Dennis sticks up for Artie, especially when it comes to the big bully in the film, Buddy. Last show, we talked about the bully of the film actually being better than one of the main characters. Not the case here. Buddy's a real piece of work. But Artie and Dennis are driving along one day, and Artie's like, you got to stop the car. And he falls in love with this old heap rust bucket of a car that this guy sells to him for $250. His brother just died in it. He kind of left that piece of information out, but turns out not only did his brother die in it, but his wife and daughter also died in the car. So Dennis kind of realizes that there's something up with this damn thing. But Artie, buys the car, kind of falls in love with it, even stands up to his folks, which up to that point in the movie, he never really didn't stand up to anybody. Just insistent that he buy this car, takes it to a two-bit garage and starts fixing it up. But and Carpenter does a great job of showing that, only a month has passed, but so much work had been done on the car, and there's only so much Artie can do after school and stuff to fix this thing up. And it's kind of revealed that the car is fixing itself and regenerating in a way too, as she develops this bond with Artie. And you mentioned that the car kind of talks. The car talks through the radio, playing old doo-wop songs and stuff. There's a great scene where actually Artie has a girlfriend. This is the transformation of Artie. He gets a girlfriend, a young Alexandra Paul, goes on a date with Artie at the drive-in, and he goes out to fix a windshield. One of the windshield wipers pops off. He's like, oh, I got it, because it was raining. So he opts out to check out that. And then Christine locks the doors and starts choking Artie's girlfriend. And I believe it's "You Keep It Knocking But You Can't Come In" by Little Richard, played on the radio as she's choking to death. So the car does kind of speak through the radio, and that's a really kind of a cool way to get around that, I thought.
Yeah, and the movie also features a John Stockwell, and he has like one of those faces that you feel like you've seen 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in Top Gun.
Yeah,
he's in Top Gun. He's in a couple other things.
He's the pilot that bugs out at the beginning of Top Gun. Maverick had to talk back down on the carrier, yeah. And he plays Dennis and does a really great job. Harry Dean Stanton's in this. He plays a cop. He's only in a few scenes, but he's great.
We mentioned Keith Gordon earlier. Alexandra Paul, which I'm trying to remember what else she was in, but I know I've seen her before.
She was in Baywatch, wasn't she?
Oh, I think you're right.
Like original Baywatch, like a first season type Baywatch.
I think you're right. I think that she was like there was Pamela Anderson and then there was Alexandra Paul. I think were like the two main women on that show.
Yep. This was her first film, and she says that she can't really watch it because she doesn't like her performance. But John Carpenter says he loved his cast. He thought they did a great job. But Keith Gordon, like you said, in a great cast. Really the standout, because he really does a great job with the transformation of Artie, right? Like all of a sudden, Artie, has broken glasses and stuff. Next thing you know, his glasses are off, his hair is slicked back.
I have another bit of trivia for you, Corey.
All right, let's see how I do.
This is our second Alexandra Paul movie.
Second Alexandra Paul movie. I'm going to need a hint. Like we've done so many shows.
Well, I'll cancel half of them. You pick the movie.
That doesn't help.
Recently in a conversation, you highlighted this particular episode as a favorite of one of our listeners.
Favorite of one of our listeners. Well, we only have 6 listeners.
So I really helped narrow it down now.
Damn it. Oh, but man, we were
having a conversation the other night with our buddy Scott.
Right.
And you were like, oh, I have this friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he listens to the show. And this particular episode, there were 2 particular episodes that really inspired him. And this one really surprised you because the song is awful.
Which wasn't in Mallrats. Because I didn't pick that one.
And the movie wasn't much better from how you kind of put it. It's like, he's going to go back and watch this movie.
She's the Virgin Connie Swale.
You got it.
Dragnet.
You got it.
The Virgin Connie Swale.
You just picked it up. how about that little bit of trivia?
Oh, man, I struggled there.
Well, no, you got there.
I got it eventually. There. Jesus, holy cow.
Well, I'm, I'm sitting here and you're like, why is John staring at his phone? Because I'm trying to go through her IMDb and see what else she's done. And it's like, oh, she did the Corey movie.
You know who else is in this? One of her first roles, Kelly Preston.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. She's only in a few scenes, but...
It's one of my big childhood crushes right there.
Oh, man. She's looking beautiful in Christine, let me tell you. All right. Let's get back to a little George Thorogood here. Bad the ball. Oh, just that saxophone again, John. You called it out earlier, but man, that was a great saxophone.
I was about to wave at you. Like are we listening to the same song yep. here? Because the guitar riff gets all the credit. But the sax is really doing all the work.
Let's get back to the movie a little bit. I talked about Artie's transformation. There's a scene in the movie where Artie's bullies, led by Buddy Repperton, actually find out he has a car, and they find out the garage it's at, and they go and they smash the hell out of Christine. One guy even takes a dump on her dashboard, and they just destroy it. And Artie comes the next day to get his wallet out of the car, and he sees that Christine is just destroyed, and he's despondent. But then he has this moment, a great moment again by Keith Gordon, where he's just like, okay, and he tells the car, okay, show me. And Christine regenerates. This really cool, like, you wonder how in 83 how they did that. So that's why I watched the making of, like, how do they show the car regenerate itself? And it's because the car parts were plastic, and they actually filmed it being smushed, and then they just reversed the film, so it looks like it's popping back out.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's got to be in reverse.
Yeah.
But it is, the effects are so great. But for me, the entire movie is Keith Gordon's transformation by the end of the movie. The makeup they put on him to make him look all sullen and gaunt, and his performance of just pure obsession. And King's, I don't know if it was King's idea, but what Carpenter and the writer's name escapes me right now, but what drew them to the book was how this played on the trope of Americans being obsessed with their cars, mm-hmm. and flipped it on its head, that the car was obsessed with the owner. And how that unhealthy that love affair is in either direction, but it's really highlighted because it's in the reverse direction.
And he plays it so well. Like, even when, like, everyone's telling him there's something wrong with your car, I don't want to get in your car's fucked up, and he's like, oh, you know, it's just a car. But you could tell, like, deep underneath, he doesn't believe that, right? He's just, no, there's nothing wrong with my car. Like, he has this connection to it, and it to the point where Christine regenerates herself and then goes after the bullies in the film that were so mean to Artie, to the point where you're kind of cheering for the car. It's almost like watching a Friday the 13th movie and cheering for Jason. Yeah, you go murder those teens. You're kind of doing the same thing here. Like, yeah, kill those fucking guys.
Well, you cheer for the car until the car starts killing the innocents and going after the innocents, mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh no, this is bad. It was Bill Phillips, by the way, was the writer. So it was Bill Phillips and John Carpenter were both drawn to this book, but yeah, you root for the car because the car is killing the bullies, and the bullies are assholes, and they're shitting on the car, and they're destroying the car, and they deserve that. I mean, they don't really deserve it. They beat up a car.
Yeah.
But oh, they deserve that. And then it's like, oh no, you go, why are you going after them? Oh no, they're friends. They're Arnie's friends. No. Oh no.
Yeah. And then the big finale is at the garage, at the junkyard, where Artie's friend Dennis and his girlfriend Lee decide they're going to try and lure Christine there and smash it with the bulldozer. And then you got this great kind of like bulldozer versus Plymouth Fury almost face off. And it's really, really well done.
Yeah. There's part of me that would love to see this movie remade with modern effects. But
funny you should say that.
Oh.
A remake from Sony Pictures and Blumhouse is currently in development.
I was going to say, but having recently seen a slew of movies lately, and I'm going to call out two. I'm going to call out Cocaine Bear, which was on a super high budget or high enough budget.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did with the CGI effects. And I finally saw this film, The Terrifier, from 2016, which was done for like $38,000. I want to see Christine done with a practical effects budget. Because the mistake I feel like they made with the Cocaine Bear, and we don't normally do movie reviews on this,
mm-hmm.
but not having a practical bear of some sort. And I'm not saying they should have trained a bear, but just give me an animatronic bear even.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think hurts that film to some degree. And, you know, The Terrifier, granted, it's about like a clown. They're able to do a lot of stuff. Even some of the gore effects are done practically. And there's something to be said about digital blood versus corn syrup.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I know you highlighted that the film wasn't gory, but I'm going to assume with Blumhouse doing an update that we are going to get some shock and awe elements of it.
I would think so. Yeah, Christine is more creepy. And maybe coming off The Thing, which, of course, was very, very gory and very effects heavy and one of the coolest fucking looking movies of all time. Christine is more creepy. Like, there's a great scene where she's chasing one of Artie's bullies. And he's like in an alley and it keeps getting narrower and narrower. And Christine keeps pushing her way through the alley and ripping the sides of the car off as she keeps going until she can get to him and pin him and kill him. And then they don't actually show the death. They just show this car like pushing itself through this tiny gap. And it's so bloody cool.
Yeah. And it shows the rage of the car. It's so weird to have a car act.
Yeah.
But that to me is the brilliance of John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
Car's the star.
Carpenter takes something like people will make comments about how like, or I'm gonna go to wrestling for a minute, but like a wrestler who wrestles under a mask, you know, almost has a handicap because they can't emote with their face at all,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you have this car with no face at all, and Carpenter gives it such a personality. With the effects from the early 80s. That's insane.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, we got a minute 54 left in Bad of the Bone. Let's keep it rolling.
Kings and queens step aside. Every woman I meet, they all stay satisfied. I want to tell you, pretty baby, what I see, I'll make my own. And I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad to the bone.
All right, that's Bad to the Bone from 1983's Christine. And another thing, when you watch a John Carpenter movie, you kind of get a double dose of music because John Carpenter also does his own scores. And the score for Christine is really, really cool as well.
Well, John Carpenter is one of the more underrated composers in Hollywood history.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more underrated directors as well. I'll put his catalog of movies up against any other director. Favorably, and I'm not saying he's better, but he's at least in the conversation with anybody that you would consider the greats in Hollywood history.
Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about this soundtrack? It was released on LP and cassette from Motown Records, featuring Bad to the Bone, Buddy Holly's Not Fade Away, Johnny Ace Pledging My Love, Robert and Johnny We Belong Together, Little Richard's Keep a Knockin', Dion and the Belmonts, the Viscounts, Thurton Harris, Danny and the Juniors, John Carpenter, of course, and Larry Williams' Boney Maroney. So a lot of great old 50s tracks on that soundtrack. I'm a big fan of the soundtrack and a big fan of the film.
Wait, are you I'm just thinking about this now. You said they're remaking this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to do it with like an 80-year-old car?
I don't know. Like you would think, right? Wait. They're not going to do it with like an 83 Dodge Dart, are they?
Well, that's kind of what I mean is like, Are they going to somehow try and, update it with a car from 40 years ago? And it's like, I don't know.
It doesn't work, I don't think. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The 58 Fury, big boat of a car, it didn't even have a gear shift. It had like a push button gear shift. There's so many just little quirks with that car that kind of make Christine. If you just get into a little hatchback that's haunted and killing people, I don't think it works as well.
Well, and that's what I'm curious about is like, are they inheriting it from a grandparent? Like, how are they going to update this story to A, work today?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to do it in today's world,
right?
Right. How does phones and cell phones and social media play into this? Right. Like, does Christine have the ability to scramble a Bluetooth in the car? Right. Because otherwise I'm just kind of calling the cops and be like, my car's trying to kill me. And like, that's the end of the movie.
I would think Jason Blum, pretty respectful with the properties that he redoes for Blumhouse. I'm thinking Invisible Man. That was a pretty good update, I thought, of an old classic. I think they keep it a 58 Fury. It has to be. It just doesn't work if it's a Datsun.
I'm just I have so many questions, and I'm interested and intrigued, but I think there's a little bit more of a puzzle box here with a film like this. I think Cujo is probably an easier one
mm-hmm.
to remake, mainly yep. because it's like dogs are still dogs, but yeah. cars have changed so much over the years, and you don't see a lot of 57 Plymouth Furies on the road anymore. Or 58 Plymouth Furies on the road anymore, right? Like,
no, you don't. And actually, the two that they didn't wreck are still out there. Like I said, one just went at auction. But imagine trying to find cars to do a remake of Christine.
Well, not just finding cars, but I'm even thinking about here on Long Island, during the summer, we see these kind of cars all the time because we do a lot of car shows.
Oh, yeah.
There's like three or four car shows easily over the course of the summer. So you see them out on the road on Sundays and you see them driving back and forth to the car shows and over by the water, you see them a lot, but you don't see them the rest of the year. So for a high school kid to be restoring this car, it made sense in 83.
Yeah.
Does it make sense now?
Well, and it was set in the 70s, if I remember correctly. Yeah, the film came out in 83, but yeah, the movie itself was set in the 70s.
Right. So are we going to see like the kid restoring like one of those revamped Volkswagen Bugs from like 20 years ago?
Maybe.
Or like a Fiat or something?
But it wouldn't be that scary, though. Well, what were those cars? Remember that car from the 80s that had a tendency to explode? They lampooned it in Top Secret.
My cousin drove one that exploded on him, the Fiero.
What was that? A Fiero?
Yeah, well, there was a Fiero, and then there was also there was another one.
Pinto, wasn't it?
I think it was a Pinto that they lampooned in Top Secret, but the Fiero was a late 80s car, which was supposed to be kind of like the replacement for the DeLorean in some ways.
Oh, okay.
Like the cheap, it was like the cheap
replacement for the DeLorean. It was like a sports car. Mm-hmm. And I remember clear as day, my cousin was driving this new Fiero on the LIE, which is the expressway over here. And all of a sudden, my mom got a phone call that my cousin's car went on fire on the road. I'm like, what happened? And she's like, he was driving and the engine went on fire.
It was a Fiero, literally.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Well, on that note, John, let's put a pin on this one. Maybe tell the folks where they can find you and what you got going on.
Sure. You can find me on a little show called Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. I am there with my buddy Corey Morissette and my other buddy Scott Haskin, and we are reviewing the entire back catalog of Aerosmith, which is a crazy dream to have because we're about a year into it now and we still have about 300 episodes to go. So we have about 6 more years of this show to make.
Good thing we're having fun with it.
Oh man, if we weren't, could you imagine the slog it would be?
Oh, I know. It'd be a chore. But that show and this show here has been a ton of fun. I can't wait to see what you pick next, John, for us to cover here on Backtracks Theme Music. As always, we're a very proud part of the Deep Dive Podcast Network. I'll just very quickly go down the run list of shows for you here. John mentioned Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited, and The Podcast Will Rock is a show I do with Mark Meyer about Van Halen. Our Aerosmith co-host Scott Haskin does Uriah Heep, The Magician's Podcast. You can also check out the Deep Purple Podcast, Skinnerd Reconsidered, T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the Other Side, Sabbath Bloody Podcast, In the Lap of the Pods, Hawk Binge, Maiden A to Z, Diary of the Madman, The Ultimate Aussie Podcast, Universally Speaking, The Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, Judas Priest Cast, North by South Podcast, So Far, So Pod, So What, The Tom Petty Project, Seaside Pod Review, and Volume for All, The Rock Roulette Podcast, and brand new Regarding Lulu, talking everything Lou Reed and Metallica. So check out all those shows wherever you get your podcasts from. So on behalf of my good buddy John Mariano, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
That's a piece of shit, Arnie.
Well, she could be fixed up.
She could.
Yeah.
Well, she could be really tough.
Forget it, Arnie. This baby's got 93,000 miles on it. Probably 193.
I don't care.
I bet it won't even start.
She'll start. You need these.
How much do you want for? I mean, whatever it is, it's not enough.
Jesus, Arnie.
Sonny, you ever owned a car before?
Yeah, he owns a Mustang.
No. I just got my license.
Name's George Lube.
Arnie Cunningham. What are you asking?
Start her up.
Really?
Her name's Christine.
I like that.